There's a famous slogan in design that goes fail faster. And the core concept is you learn from every failure. So you want to, in design, you want to prototype as early as possible, as quickly as possible, as cheaply as possible, as many times as possible. And you want to iterate, and you want to iterate, and you want to iterate. I've taken that to heart in terms of, at first, serializing and write a chapter, get feedback, immediately apply that feedback to the next chapter, and repeat, and just improve as much as possible, as quickly as possible. Get that first book done, get that first series done, get it out the door, and take the lessons learned and move on to the next thing.
This is the Crit RPG Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything Lit RPG, Progression Fantasy, and Royal Road.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Crit RPG Podcast, the only podcast that brings you authors who can't count. With me today is JP Valentine, Nixia, the author of This Trilogy is Broken, which famously has four books. And yes, we know it's a joke, and I'm making a joke. It's all good. Hi, JP, how are you doing?
Doing great. How are you, Maddox?
Pretty good, pretty good. We've been talking about puns before the podcast started, so this is going to be great. So you can find that in the bonus material if you want. But we've been just like hanging out for a little bit, talking about Dragon Con and what we've experienced there. It was pretty cool. And I think we're going to be talking about a bit more about that after the podcast is over, like your adventures at Dragon Con, because Dragon Con stories are amazing. And mine weren't that
great.
You said
missing all of Dragon Con.
Yeah, missing all of Dragon Con because it was sick. But yeah, first and foremost, why don't we jump in? Like, who are you?
I'm JP Valentine. I have written and am writing four series. I started with a progression fantasy called The Nothing Mage that ran for three books and then was finished. I followed that up with my comedy series, This Quest is Bullshit, which is a four-book broken trilogy about a girl whose life quest is to head to the next town over and fetch a loaf of bread. I followed that up with my episodic dungeon crawler called Dungeon Devotee, which did quite well on Royal Road and is now on hiatus. And I am currently writing my Cultivation in Space called The Stargazer's War. Book two of that came out about a month ago now.
And yeah, we should talk about all of that. Also, I want to talk about your writing process, because you mentioned you had like this like very non-standard way of writing when it comes to like Royal Road and like progression fantasy. We want to talk about that too at some point. But first and foremost, pick one, any one series you want to talk about, or maybe two, and tell me why and how and when and where for that book.
Sure. So let's talk about Stargazer's War, because that's the one that I'm currently writing and I'm spending far and away the most time thinking about. That story started when I was reading, God, it might have been Dragonheart. One of the, I don't want to say obscure, but maybe a little bit older, like more traditionalist Shansha stories. And I was struck by how dependent the genre is on this sense of massive scale. The armies are always millions of people. The cities have billions of people living in them. And the protagonist always starts off in this tiny little village and powers up until he's the strongest person in that village and then moves to a bigger village. And that continues on and on and on until he's just in this like massive empire. And I got this idea that what could be larger scale than space, than the universe.
Space.
So I kind of started from there. I had this idea to write Cultivation, taking some of the Taoism away, because I've had enough Taoism. I feel like we've all had enough Taoism at this point. And I figured let's see how this works if instead of meditating on the Tao, we are sitting and meditating on existentialism and nihilism and what it means to find purpose in an infinite, cold, uncaring universe, and how
nihilism.
Does one reckon with their own smallness? while still trying to grow and defy the heavens and all of that.
Mm-hmm. So it's nihilism, isn't it?
Yeah, so there's nihilism, there's existentialism, there's a handful of other things. It's not very, like, I'm not out there spouting, like, Nietzsche and Sartre and, like, actual, like, written philosophers, because I'm not particularly interested in regurgitating what other philosophers have written.
So you're not writing He Who Fights with Monsters? I'm joking. Like,
I have a snarky protagonist and have been accused of Jason Asanoism.
Again with the isms, nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
But this is it's a story about one man's journey, and so most of the philosophy are his thoughts. It's him, like, sitting and wrestling with these issues and the conclusions that he personally comes to, as opposed to what have these famous authors of the past come up with.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. I mean, like, sometimes those overlap, right? I've recently been reading Cradle, and again, you were talking about Taoism and that kind of stuff, but I've been reading Cradle, and I realized that in writing my second book in my series, that I actually have a skill that is very similar to one in Cradle. And then I read it, I was like, oh shit, people are going to be like, this is the same thing, you stole this. I'm like, no, I didn't. But it's going to be interesting.
I have been accused at this point a number of times of ripping off Cradle by Amazon readers and Goodreads reviewers who I think do not realize that Will White did not invent cultivation.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, like, it's I don't know, like, there's this like stupid pun that's on my head, in my mind right now, and in my head and on my mind, there you go. And ever since you said Tao, I've been thinking about, like, cultivation based on money, and you're meditating on the dough. Like, that would be amazing. But yeah,
that sounds like fun. I feel like,
oh, or even better, like bread cultivation.
Ooh.
Ooh. You rise. That would be so cool. You have, like, the power of blue, and you can make six things together.
Instead of a special cultivation chamber, you enter the proving chamber.
Yeah, or like the oven.
Yeah.
To harden yourself. Like, oh, no, man.
The pills are just yeast.
like basic yeast. Oh god, yeah. Like, there's so many cool things you can do with, like, space cultivation, though. Like, I have my own thing that I wanted to do with it, but I'm probably never gonna get around to it because I can't make it work. But okay. So in general, you make it sound like it's, like, very introspective and lots of, like, thinking, but I mean, people are punching other people, right?
Yes, there's fighting and face slapping and all of the your traditional cultivation kind of goodies.
Ooh, nice. I will admit this. I have never read a machine translated cultivation novel. Maybe I should. Just like this.
Neither have I. And I
you're courting death.
I should. So I allow myself exactly one you're courting death per book.
Nice. That's magic, right? Right, like one YCD per book.
Yeah.
Like the magic. Cool. So I actually want to ask, because, like, I haven't read Dungeon Devotee, but I want to ask you about that because I want to know, what was it like to go on hiatus with it?
So I originally conceived that story as this episodic dungeon crawler. Core concept was every chapter is one floor of the dungeon, and it is entirely self-contained. So every chapter, he fights two things, he finds some secret, he gets a level up every chapter, he gets loot every chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And it was designed to be, for me, a palate cleanser. Mm-hmm. It's the end of the month, I'm going to spend 2 days writing this Dungeon Devotee chapter to like take a step back from my main story and write this like fun like combat fighting thing.
Yeah.
As well as a way to keep in touch with my Royal Road audience after I stopped serializing, because I did not serialize the Stargazers War. And it got wildly out of hand in terms of the chapters just suddenly became twice as long as they were originally intended to be.
Oh,
suddenly,
no.
Instead of 2 days at the end of the month, it was taking a full week to write each of these chapters. And as it turns out, the demand for once a month web serials is not actually that high. So it did well, and there are a lot of people who really like it, but comparing the numbers that Dungeon Devotee did to the numbers that Stargazers War did, especially with how much time and effort I was putting into writing these chapters of Dungeon Devotee, it got to be very difficult to motivate myself to sit down and spend a week writing a chapter of Dungeon Devotee when I could instead write two chapters of Stargazers War and make progress on that next book and otherwise push the story that was paying the bills effectively.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm asking because I'm also like, I'm at this like crossroads, right? Because I really like my story, but the second relaunch kind of flopped hard. Like the first relaunch was good. It went from 200 followers to 1,400. The second one, I'm now struggling to get 800. So,
I have no advice for you.
There is no advice. I'm a trailblazer in that sense.
I was fortunate enough to get into Royal Road early enough when I accidentally posting five chapters and then slowing down and posting once every couple of days, I managed to get onto trending, and then that whole thing blew up.
Yeah.
And it's gotten since then much more competitive, and getting onto it's called Rising Stars now is a lot more difficult. And I know there's all sorts of people gaming it in all sorts of different ways and trying to do that. And it used to be, if you wrote like a fairly competent story, you could get onto trending pretty consistently. And that is just no longer the case. It's just so competitive these days.
Yeah. I mean, like, you have to game it. Like, some people really just luck out. So like Reese, like the person that I talked to yesterday, she just wrote and it went well. Like sometimes people just like the algorithm just finds you, or like the right people just find you, and then someone recommends you on Reddit and just things just fall into place. And I think just if you're interested, like in general, the problem that I have with Torchbearer is like, A, the story is fundamentally flawed. There's like a fundamental flaw in it. Because I didn't know what the story is about, so I didn't have like any sort of like interpersonal conflict. It's like all kind of like interpersonal, so like it's all in her, and it's that and fighting, so it's not that engaging because there's no overarching theme. And the other one is like, it's the second relaunch, right? So I got like a lot of followers like really, really fast, and then kind of like it just like broke apart. Because the algorithm just didn't push me up again. And also, people who have read the story before like were like, why would I read it again? But many people did, but some people were like, nah, I'm good, thanks. So that's my analysis of it. I've written a Reddit post about it if people who are listening to this might want to listen to that or like read that. Okay, cool. But okay, so like in the end, Did you not like this is like a leading question, I guess, but did you not like struggle when you were writing or like hiatusing a Dungeon Devotee? I have one episode with Puddles, so the guy who writes Randy the Ghost Hound. Yeah, right. As he says, Randidly. I didn't know that either.
That is so much worse.
Right? I don't know why he ran did that. Anyway, the thing though that he says, like, I didn't really care about the readers at all. I just finished the story. I'm done, because he's a Chad. But What about you? When you were making that decision, like what went through your head and kind of what was the decision that you said, like, hey?
I mostly just didn't want to write that story anymore. And looking back, that was the beginning of a long period in which I did not write at all. Dark Ages War 2 was delayed by about a year because I was at that point after all of the Nothing Mage and all of This Quest Is Bullshit and almost two entire books of Dungeon Empty and an entire book of Dark Ages War. I did not realize how burnt out I was. And I basically announced, hey guys, I'm not going to write Dungeon Devotee for a bit. I'm going to focus on Stargazer's War. That project is just more exciting to me. And then I wrote a little bit of Stargazer's War. And then I realized that, like, oh, like, I am just, like, struggling to get anything done. And there was a long period of time where I really struggled to be productive, to get any writing done whatsoever. And it took about a year before I kind of like managed to regather myself and rebuild my routine and get writing again and finally get Stargazer's War 2 finished and out the door and published from the Westin Bar at Dragon Con this year. And yeah, it's been a chaotic period of time, and it's kind of funny. If you look at the Stargazer's War 2 Amazon reviews, Amazon has this feature that will do an AI summary of the different reviews. And it will divide it into different categories. And it's given Stargazer's War 2 a green check mark for worth the money, for value for money. Exclusively because, if you click on that, it's because there are so many reviews that include the text, it was worth the wait. And almost, it's the vast majority of views are just complaining that I took way too long to write this book and hoping that I don't take as long to write this next book. And, burnout hits and it sneaks up on you and you don't realize that you're burnt out until suddenly it's just so difficult to get anything done.
Oh yeah, like totally. Coupled with like ADHD, which like already makes it hard to get anything done in the first place. But then losing that one thing that you really like and the one thing that you can get done and then you also can't do that, that's tough. That's really tough. Is there anything in particular that you would say helped you get that back beyond time?
Rebuilding the routine, getting back to like very strict, like wake up, drink coffee, have like a set period of time where I'm allowing myself to like get to be fully like awake. When I first like started rebuilding the routine, it was play exactly two games of Teamfight Tactics. As this like discrete, like I get two games and then it's desktop off, go sit down at the writing desk and it's writing time. And getting back into the swing of that, of kind of not quite hour by hour, but like very segmented, like the day starts like this and then I do this and then I do this and then I do this, and enforcing that to get back at it. I found I was a lot more productive when I was serializing. So the Nothing Mage, This Quest Is Bullshit, I was writing on a very strict serial schedule. Nothing Mage was three times a week. This Quest Is Bullshit was two times a week. And like it or not, I had to get my chapter out on Monday. And that led me to write a lot more. But I think the overall quality dipped a little bit in terms of if I didn't have a very firm idea of what I wanted a chapter to be, that chapter didn't necessarily end up like quite as good because I had to get it out the door anyway. And I was a lot more stressed and a lot more like, I mean, building up towards burnout because every day, like, had to get a certain number of words out and there's just this constant deadline that I had to constantly be meeting. So now that I'm not serializing, now that I'm going directly to Amazon with Stargazer's War, I find that I'm a lot less stressed. I have a lot more time to plan out how I want the shape of the story to go. I have a lot more time to kind of figure out like how each individual character arc should go, to plan like what threads am I spinning up, what balls am I tossing into the air so that I'm ready to catch them come the climax of a book. And I think that leads ultimately to better books. It leads to stories that don't serialize super well because there's a lot more time spent in build up and a lot less like immediate payoff at the end of every chapter.
Holy shit. How dare you give me hope? But go ahead, please.
Yeah, so I'm a lot happier, and I'm mentally in a better place now that I'm not serializing, and now that I am writing just books in the time scale of however long it takes to write the book, I'm writing the book. But I am getting a lot less words out the door. I'm getting, in a quantifiable way, less done. But I think happier with the things that I am getting done.
I think that's worth it, right?
I may be the only quality over quantity author in the progression fantasy space.
No, there's two of us. No, people are memeing about it, right? Because I don't know how much you know about it, but like I said, I wrote Torchbearer, right? Wrote that. I really love that story. It's great. But I'm always going back and like editing and like doing more stuff on it. And that definitely is, it's important to me. I kind of want to see how far I can push that. And maybe that's a bit too ambitious for my first story. And that's also like a big reason of why I kind of went to this point of, do I really want to do this?
I would advise strongly against going backwards.
How would I go backwards?
Going back and re-editing or rewriting old work.
I mean, people say that, yeah, but I mean, that's how stories have been written for thousands of years, right? I mean, like before, when the novel became a thing, that's how people wrote it, right? You write the first draft, and I mean, like, hey, you're doing this too. I know this because we talked about it online. We chatted about it. And maybe now is a good point to talk about it. So you mentioned that you write the first draft and then you write it again.
No.
That was J.M. Clark.
Potentially. That was definitely not me, though.
Okay, cool. So you don't edit your stuff.
I write very, very slowly. So I build chapters sentence by sentence, and by the time a sentence actually hits the page, I know where it's going, and I know what part it is going to play within the chapter, and I'm generally like very, very happy with the shape of a given chapter by the time it's all written and it's posted to the Patreon.
I mean, that makes sense. For me, I'm still struggling to find my own kind of my own way in this. So, I mean, I've been writing for a long time, but never really like with purpose. So I've always kind of like, tossed stuff on the page, and I was very arrogant when I was younger. And then I also got like burned out in writing, and I thought like, hey, why isn't this working? The heavens must be bad, must be cursing me. So only now am I actually like starting to like really think about how do I actually want to write. So I tried the whole like write the entire thing and then go back and edit it, but I didn't know how to edit, so that was bad. I should have been literally taking the entire thing, looking at it, and going like, what do I actually want to say with the story, and then rewriting from scratch. That's what I should have been doing. Because, for example, if you ever want to rewrite, like JP and like 99% of all other authors on this podcast do not do this, but let me just explain. So you have a story, let's say, with like a bunch of characters and okay-ish plot and you're kind of okay with it. But then you realize like, hey, I have like these 20 chapters in the middle that are just fight scenes. Nothing else. Just fight scenes. And they had do nothing for the story. It's just fight scene after fight scene after fight scene. And it's the same problem repeated over and over again. That's not fun. So what am I going to do with it? So then you look at it and you're like, oh, well, I can take this out. But then you realize that in those fight scenes, you dropped some hints that you now need to like put somewhere else. So you take those hints and you try and cram them somewhere else, but that shifts everything else. And then you take that and try to kind of like take other stuff out of there too, because there's other problems. And by the end, you're like ending up with this like janky Jenga tower that's like almost close to collapse, and it's not real story anymore.
It's tricky because everything in a book is intertwined fundamentally. If it's not, you're doing something wrong, and that means it's hard to cut out chunks, and it means if you have to rewrite a segment, then you have to find a way to include the same information that any information that's referenced later or any information that you were building towards somehow still has to be included. I run into similar issues in prose, even on a much smaller scale, in terms of, I'll have this realization, oh crap, I was supposed to include this exchange in a particular scene, or this piece of information needs to be dropped here. Yeah. And I'll go back and look through the chapter and try to find a place where I can insert a sentence or an offhand comment or something and realize that every sentence flows into the next one.
Yeah.
In a way that makes it so tricky. I have to start unwinding things and almost like unweaving the tapestry to try and insert.
It's airtight.
Exactly. And it can be so tricky. And once you undo it, it can start to unravel and fall apart unless you are really, really tight with it. And edits like that and rewrites can get to be a lot more complex than they might at first seem.
And to be honest, this is exactly what I'm talking about. So if I were to do this again today, and this is again something that we can talk about in question three, but if I were to do this again today, I would not go and try and like do like a patchwork fix. I would take the entire thing, like look at what I want to do with the story, crumple it all up, toss it aside, and start from scratch, now knowing what I wanted to do. And then I can edit that, right? Because I kind of know like, okay, like these things I have to do, these things I don't have to do. It's basically like, and that's the next point on it, it's like plotting. Like you plot for like 150,000 words. That's your plotting, right? And then you do it again. But to be honest, Travis Baldry like said something that has been stuck in my head ever since I interviewed him. And he said that he hates doing things twice and he wants to be a pantser, but he can't. So now he just becomes a plotter. Like, damn, fuck. So that's what I'm trying to do now. And I'm going like all in on that. So I have like the big overview, everything, but each chapter I plot out into segments, and each segment is like one paragraph. So I plot paragraph by paragraph, but not all at the start. Like if I want to write a chapter, then I plot the chapter. And I think that's okay. It's fun. It's actually pretty fun. And what it doesn't do is, do you ever have that where you're like, you're so in the zone, you're writing, you're like, oh, this is amazing. And then A, it's not amazing. And then B, on the second day, you're like, where am I? Why did I, what? Do you ever have that?
No.
Damn it. Damn it.
every time I come away from a chapter thinking it's amazing, it actually is amazing.
Confidence surges.
No, for real though, I would say I don't plot quite so meticulously.
Mm-hmm.
I generally know going into a chapter what that chapter is going to be, what that chapter is trying to accomplish, and what role that chapter has to fill in the story.
Mm-hmm.
And then I start from Lights Up, and the scene flows. for lack of a better word. It's we I start at whatever imagery I want to begin with. So currently I'm writing chapter one of book three, and it starts with lights up on the protagonist meditating on top of a spaceship that is currently flying through space.
As one does.
And I know what, like, there's a conversation I know I want them to have at some point in this chapter, and I want to include the setup for what is going to be one of the major threads of the book. But beyond that, it's okay. He's meditating, he's thinking about these things, he gets interrupted by something, and events naturally follow. Like, that's how I generally prefer to write, and it's a lot more free flowing. It's plancy, I guess, like in that place between plotting and pantsing. And I personally prefer it because I think it leads to more natural storytelling. Mm-hmm. It leads to storytelling the way somebody might tell a story to their friend, and it leads towards events occurring in a more realistic way. It leads towards events like unfolding in the same kind of way that they might in day-to-day life, in the real world, in what have you.
Yeah, it does make sense. So let me clarify. When I plot, I don't plot like this character has to do this, this character has to do that. You know what time it is? That's right. It's a new ad. And this time I have two amazing stories for you to check out. First one is about a friend Saving Throw, who writes a story called So When Am I a Hero? It's a system apocalypse that is quite frankly amazing. I don't like system apocalypses usually, and I devoured that one. So go and check it out. There's a link below the podcast. The second one is from another friend of mine, because I have two friends, called The Infinity Dungeon by Reject Humanity. Premise is actually pretty cool. Guy goes hiking on the Appalachian trails and stumbles into the only and first dungeon in the world, and he's the only person on Earth with a system, at least for a while. All right, go check him out. I appreciate it a lot, and I'll see you next time. Think of it more as like writing the entire scene, but without all the bells and whistles, right? So it's like I spoke
close
to this character.
Outline.
Yeah, very close to an outline, but not really. It's like you could post this on Royal Road and it would be a story, but it wouldn't have any prose in it. It wouldn't have any voice, any charm. It would literally just be like, I got up in the morning. I went had coffee. I met the baker, and I told the baker, "Hi, by the way, when's the next coffee coming in?" And the baker replied, "Hey, we're not going to have any more coffee for a while now." And no, like this is how it goes, right? So because I usually get lost in the prose, like I try to make everything sound so cool that then in the end, like I kind of forget where I was going to begin with, and that's a problem for me. So that's how I solve that.
Like, say, a tree growing as it may, and more like a vine following the wall of a building or a frame that has been given it.
Kind of. I like it's paint by numbers, but I also do the numbers for paint by numbers. And then I also paint by numbers. Right, it's kind of like doing a sketch and then filling it out. The way that I always like to say is like, do you know like there's like really, really long balloons?
Yes. That like the clowns use for balloon animals.
Exactly. And they're like super, super thin at the beginning, but then you blow on them like get like big, and then you can like knot them and everything. Mm-hmm. Like what I do is I write a very, very thin balloon, and then I inflate it and then I knot it.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's how I do that.
I love talking to other authors because I feel like everyone has their own process and their own way.
Yeah.
Not just that they go about the mechanics of writing, but that they conceptualize what the writing process is like.
Yeah, right.
I've never once heard of somebody describe writing as making a balloon animal. But the way you describe it, it makes so much sense.
And if you read it, it doesn't. I'm kidding, because it's all in knots and like, look, it may be an elephant. No, it's this like idea of like having like something small that gets that then gets like inflated is maybe that is my is the thing I have in mind. But I also like yours, where it's like the, you know, like the vine kind of like growing. You do have like lots of like nature stuff in your books, now come to think of it. Interesting. I don't have a lot of balloons, but I'm more like an audio person, I guess.
Mm.
All right. Yes?
No? I have nothing. So,
you sound like someone said something. Okay, but I have something for you. So what's the best advice you've ever gotten as a writer, speaking of talking to other writers?
And okay, so this isn't strictly writing advice, actually. This came from college. I studied computer science, as I think a lot of Russian fantasy writers and readers may have.
Yeah.
And my focus at the time was on interface design. So I spent a lot of time learning the intricacies of design, of how do you get a user to look in at a certain place to intuitively understand how something works, to otherwise use an interface without thinking about it. And that taught me a handful of lessons that I think have been immensely useful in writing. Mm-hmm. One of which is how to think about how every little aspect affects the end user experience. So I mm-hmm. construct a sentence and I think about how does this phrasing impact the reader? How does this particular word like mm-hmm. affect the reader?
Yeah.
And that's been very useful in terms of writing impactful prose, in crafting sentences and scenes in a way that have as much of a punch to them as I think I can manage. The other big one is there's a famous slogan in design that goes, fail faster.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the core concept is you learn from every failure. So you want to, in design, you want to prototype mm-hmm. as early as possible, as quickly as possible, as cheaply as possible, as many times as possible. And you want to iterate, and you want to iterate, and you want to iterate. Mm-hmm. I've taken that to heart in terms of, at first, serializing and write a chapter, get feedback, immediately apply mm-hmm. that feedback to the next chapter, yeah. and repeat, and repeat, and repeat, and just improve as much as possible, as quickly as possible. As well as get that first book done, get that first series done, and get it out the door, and take the lessons learned, and move on to the next thing, and then move on to the next thing, and fail faster, and improve every time. And I'm very proud of the fact that every series I've written has performed better than the series before that. Mm-hmm. And I think that is largely because I have continued to learn and grow and improve as an author as time goes on. Mm-hmm. And I pray that I never stop doing that, that I never give up on continuing to improve and to hone my craft as much as I can.
I'm quite sure that this isn't even your final form.
Look, it's always been a progression fantasy this entire yes, time, exactly. actually.
Always has been. It's all progression fantasy. It always has been.
You thought you were reading books. This has actually been my training arc.
Exactly. Like, while you were out partying, I was studying the word. Actually, you can go party and study the word. That's nice. That's what real chads do.
While you were posting 5 chapters a week, I was studying the word.
Oh my god, while you were making millions on Amazon, I was studying the rewrites. God. But like, I mean, like, it clearly pays off, right? So To Catch a Falling Leaf, which is Stargazer's War 2 for all the heathens out there like me who had to look it up, is now looking at sitting at 866 star ratings on Amazon, probably even more because I'm looking at the German Amazon. And it's at 4.8, which is really good, right? So, I think it hits. I think it's good. So, like, some newer authors, right, they're releasing, they have like 21, 22, maybe 30 reviews, and they're like, whoa, this is amazing, right? And you're like looking at book two of something, and it's at 866, and it's like been out in less than a month. So there you go. It's nice.
It is nice.
I'm really happy for you, man.
Thank you.
Cool. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Well, earlier on, I talked a little bit about like, hey, what would I have done different if I were to rewrite this book again? Which, by the way, I will. But what would be one thing that you would change, or that you would do differently from now on, or have learned it and you would do differently from now on?
I would not do Dungeon Devotee the way that I did.
Okay.
I think a big motivator towards writing Dungeon Devotee is this monthly episodic lit RPG thing was that after the Nothing Mage, after this quest is bullshit, I wanted to prove to myself that I could land a story in the top 20 of Royal Road best rated.
I have to have like a soundboard on this, right? But I want to, you did, which is good, but I do want to like play the Wayne Jude sound where it's like, remind yourself that overconfidence is a slow and insidious killer. Go ahead.
And I did, and it was very exciting at the time. Mm-hmm. But as all stories eventually, or as the vast majority of stories eventually do, it did start to slide down the rankings after a couple of months. And again, I think the whole monthly episodic concept was very experimental and very like new. And it was a risk going in terms of like, that's not the type of story a lot of people want to read. That's not necessarily like the kind of thing that sells. It's certainly not the kind of thing that really drives Patreon.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I, looking back, right from the outset, I promised that I would not put it on Kindle Unlimited because I started writing the story at a time where Railroad Stories moving to Kindle Unlimited would get you a huge bombardment of half-star ratings.
Yeah.
That has since curtailed a lot. That's, I don't think, really the case anymore.
You get some.
And I was especially concerned at that point after having like just put This Quest is Bullshit onto Kindle Unlimited that I would start out the story with people like not trusting me and like so I came out with this promise, like, it's not going to go on Kindle Unlimited, it's going to stay on Royal Road, it will eventually sit on the top completed list somewhere. Which meant that when I did eventually put book one on Amazon, it's not Kindle Unlimited. It did not really sell because it's not Kindle Unlimited. Mm-hmm. And the end result was I ended up putting a lot of work into this story that did not do a good job of driving Patreon, did not do a good job of keeping my serial audience engaged and connected to me to thus drive them to my other stories, and did not do a good job of selling on Amazon in its own right. And is at this point largely this thing that I owe it to people to finish, and I have to finish, that is sitting on hiatus with however many followers on Royal Road and is mostly a source of people complaining to me that I'm not writing that.
8,612. Jesus Christ. Now I see your slightly suffering expression here, but just take your time, dude. Right? It's like, it's so easy to kind of start doing things for the ego. When, I mean, fuck, I've done it a lot, right? Where you're like, hey, I have to do this or I have to do that, and this is super important and this is super important. But in the end, like, the only thing that's really important is the promises you make to yourself, and then the promises you really make to yourself. So the ones that you really want to stick by. So for Torchbearer, I want to finish that story. I really do. Because I want to be a guy who finishes stuff. I have spent 28 years of my life, or like even longer, not finishing shit. And I don't want to be that person anymore. So that's important to me. And yeah, sure, the book might never make any money because, like, to be honest, I had 5 Patreons. I earned like $35 off of Torchbearer, right? It's like, who's to say it even right now? But I'm in for the penny and I'm in for the pound. So that means that I really want to finish it just because A, I kind of want to see it finished. I'm really excited about it. And B, also, I can do this for fun. And all these other things that are coming in are like, hey, you're not as successful as like all these authors you're interviewing. You're not like on Amazon, you're not published. Like I've recently also started to become a literary agent, right? So now I'm selling other people's books, but not mine, right? Because like literally I cannot sell my own book. I can sell everyone else's, but not mine. All these thoughts don't really do anything because they're not a promise.
No, I think that's great. I think especially with the way that some of these top railroad stories can pick up Patreon income, and now with Aethon putting out a lot of these books, and Lord knows what the future is going to look like now that DCC has been signed. But
I think you don't even know half of it.
Little self-pub me is doesn't want to know half of it at this point, but there's...
Go ahead.
I think a lot of people come into writing, especially on Royal Road, with the expectation that it's going to be a money maker. It's going to go onto Patreon and generate all of this income, and they're going to get super famous and what have you. And I think, honestly, like, writing is fun. Writing is magical. And I think it's really easy to let the business side of things get in the way of that.
Yeah. And if it's not magical to you, then why the fuck are you doing it? You could be making more money flipping burgers at McDonald's on average. Because like it's so easy to look at like, you know, the Zorgars, the Sherloons, and the JP Valentines and be like, yeah, I can do that too. And no, it's hard. All right. I mean, I know I'm a good author. I also know that I have let my arrogance get in the way of a good story, because I was like, no, this can't, like, it can't be this easy. I have to like make it harder. Why? Right. So on the other hand, yeah, it's like you said, like writing is fun and it should be fun and you should be doing it out of fun. I always like to say that why would you ever write to live if you can live to write?
Yeah.
So, okay. What's one book that you love and why is it awesome?
At every opportunity, I ask this question with some frequency, and every time I always answer Worth the Candle by Alexander Wales.
Yes.
Oh
my god, Alex is so good.
It is a story that I think on Amazon has been picking up a bit more attention recently, but for a very long time was incredibly under the radar and not something that a lot of people had read. And it's honestly fantastic. It's this beautiful love letter to world building and to introspection and character growth. And there's so many details and so much thought and genuine passion that has gone into constructing the world of this story. That I believe genuinely every fantasy author should read this book, because there are not many stories out there where you can definitively say this author did this particular thing better than anyone else. Yeah. And I think there are a handful of things, of like specific things that Worth the Candle does better than any other story, and that's worth learning from.
There's no one quite like Alexander Wales.
Absolutely.
He's just... Have you read his blog?
No, I haven't.
go and read his blog. He has like really, really cool blog stuff about like role building, all that kind of stuff. It's the way he thinks about it is very intuitive once you read about it, and then you're like, why haven't I done this this entire time? Or if you have, you're like, oh, this is how I do this, right? Very, very cool stuff. It's alexanderwales.com. And yes, absolutely worth the candle. It's really, really great. Also, this used to be about Dungeon. Alexander's
also phenomenal.
Other one is also phenomenal, yeah. And I think he has like a new one out.
Is Thresholder.
Yes, exactly. We are like preparing for... book two of that soon, so that's gonna be nice. But like, yeah, Alexander Wells is outstanding. I don't know, I have to get him on the pod at some point. I really do.
Absolutely.
Okay. Actually, I think he even follows me on Blue Sky.
Ooh.
Yeah, but like before I even had the podcast or anything, like he just followed me on Blue Sky. Alan G too. I'm like, what, how? Right.
Fan of Torchbearer, maybe.
Actually, no. Okay, I'm always joking about this, but like the fans that I do have are like hardcore. Some of them have like read all three versions.
Oh, right? Damn.
Yeah, and like this version is good. Like that version is even better. Like, wow, it's improved a lot. Like now, this is really fun.
You'd be surprised what. Hmm? I mean, most authors tend to read a lot, and a lot of, I think, under the radar stories can be, you'd be surprised at like who has read what. Back in the day, I think one of the very like early reviews on the Nothing Mage, like very, very early, that I did not realize was him until much later, was from Mechanimus.
Oh yeah.
And it took like a lot of time passing for me, like, wait a minute, is this? Oh shit, that's a Journey of Black and Red guy. Like, realize that, like, oh my god, this, like, top author on Royal Road had left me a review.
Yeah. G was amazing. And, I'm joking here. And he did also read Torchbearer, and he said it was shit. I'm just kidding. Because I asked him to. No, he said, like, he gave me some really, really, like, really, really good feedback that led me to realize, like, oh shit, yeah, the characterization is all off. Like, I'm not giving this character time to breathe because I'm scared of what she will do when she does. Like, no, don't think. That's not a good place to be at as an author. You have to give your characters room to breathe, as you said earlier when you were talking about it. I don't know. But yeah, like, worth the candle, 100%. One book that I haven't heard being talked about a lot is A Practical Guide to Evil.
Oh, probably one of my favorite web serials.
So yeah, like that's a really cool story. I really like that. Same level as Worm and Wandering In. I think like those are like the trifecta.
I think it's better than either of those two stories, actually. Downloaded all of Practical Guide to Evil as a single EPUB using the Web to EPUB extension.
Mm-hmm.
It came out 8,000 pages long.
Yeah.
And I sat down and I did nothing but read that story for a week.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
It's phenomenal. It's very, very good.
Mm-hmm. It has a bit of emotional damage in there. Same as like
A bit.
Just a bit. I mean, like, does it have Worm levels of emotional damage? Probably not. But then what does? So, like, this is one of the reasons why I haven't read Worm yet, because I'm like, this smells like emotional damage. I'm not stable enough to read this.
Yeah, as an author, I'm a sucker for storytelling and the story structure and the various tropes and characters in there. So Practical Guide to Evil just kind of hits that right on the nose.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's like super interesting, right? Like it's like almost like this web 2.0 generation of storytellers who like forged a path when there was no Royal Road, and people was like writing stories on blogs, and like our generation, like the Zoomer generation or like the next generation, whatever, has almost forgotten them, right? But I think that, like, now we're like unearthing many of these stories and just like, putting them out there, and I think they're going to be at the forefront of this new thing. I'm really looking forward to taking that and going to Frankfurt with it and trying to get some translation rights sold.
Ooh.
It's gonna be nice. Yeah. Oh yeah. Like, it's gonna be awesome. I believe
Hail Lights is the other story.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Pelites is it's also on top rated. And did you hear? We're making a Calamitous Bob audiobook.
Oh, interesting. I didn't realize there wasn't one already.
No, there wasn't. That's how I became an agent.
Oh, fascinating.
I went to Jiba, was like, hey Jiba, y'all got any more of those like audiobooks? And he's like, yeah, well, Journey Back in Red didn't do so well as an audiobook. I'm like, oh, heresy. Like, yeah. Like, what about Bob? He's like, because I really want to read Bob. And so he's like, yeah, well, I don't have time for it. I'm like, my brother in Christ. Give me. I'll do it for you because I know all the publishers. And then,
I think Lit RPG outperforms other genres in audio more than it does on an ebook.
Yes.
Cultivation other like more generic progression fantasy, I think, does worse than Lit RPG specifically in audio.
Yeah. And Journey is... I mean, Journey... So what Alex didn't do is marketing. Neither
I'm
for
aware.
Bob nor for Journey.
I'm aware.
Yeah. And my heart almost exploded in my chest. I was like, what the fuck? Because it's such a good story. I love Journey of Black and Red so much. Like I spent 2 weeks walking through Chicago doing nothing but listening to Journey of Black and Red. And it was a great time. I had a great time. Drinking coffee, wandering, listen to it. But just buy some ads, my brother.
Yeah.
And
as someone who is indie and publishes all of my own stuff, every once in a while I find myself wondering what do the publishing houses really provide? And then I see something like the way Alex went about publishing Journey of Black and Red, and realize maybe some authors really do need someone who knows what they're doing on the marketing front.
I mean, I'll be the first one to say, no one in this space needs an agent. No one. You can all do it yourself. No one needs a publisher either. You can all do it yourself. But some people don't like to do that, or they can't, or they don't know how, and they don't want to learn.
It's a lot of work.
Yes.
It's effectively running a small business.
And it's a second skill set. And if you can't change the oil in your car, you get a mechanic to do it. Even if you're a mechanimus. And then you get a publisher to do it for you. Right. And if you can't negotiate, another one of my clients, because he literally goes you can negotiate, please do. I'm like, sure, here's my contract. He's like, I'll sign. Like, no. Read the contract first, then you sign. He's like, okay. Right? I'm like, Jesus Christ. That sort of stuff. Like, that's what I'm there for. And also, doing more stuff. But it's not an agenting podcast, so I'm not going to talk about it here. But I'm really looking forward to Calamitous Bob as an audio. Because I'll be quite honest, we sold this to our sound booth, which is always great. Jeff Hayes has got to be in it. I think it's not Annie Alicott. It's damn it, the name eludes me right now. She's amazing, and I know she is, but I can't quite remember the name. I'll write it down in the comments after. But we're really looking forward to it. Probably putting it on KU at the same time, and we're also maybe doing a bit of a advertising strategy on it. So,
I've seen some of the sketches and the early cover arts for some of the latest book. It's very exciting. It looks very, very good.
Yeah, have you seen the finished one?
The fairy with the eyeball.
No, the eighth one is totally not an evil empress.
Yes, I've seen that one.
Yeah, that one was really cool. I So here's what happened, right? So I got the manuscript because I needed to send it over to Sound Booth. And I opened it on Word. And whenever I opened a Word document, it showed up. I'm like, okay, you know what? Like, I can't sell this without having read it. So I'm going to read the first couple of chapters. 14 hours later, I was like, oh God, need to begin with the next one. Give me the next one.
That happens. That's a hazard of this genre. Some of these books just hook you.
Oh my God. Yeah. Like one that I've recently signed, Orphan. Have you read that?
I have not. Who's that by?
Guy Incognito. He's new. He's super new. And I love nothing more than finding people where I'm like, I believe in you. Like, this is amazing. So let's do this. And then, that book is really, really cool. The main character is like kind of like shy, like not shy, but like monosyllabic. And he's very stubborn. So at one point, they're like, well, you got a lot of like dexterity and stamina. And so you probably should be like a rogue. So you should be dual wielding. He's like, got it. And he walks over to the two-handed swords. And they're like, what the fuck are you doing? And he's like, dual wielding. So he ends up like dual wielding two-handed swords. I'm like, sure. Sure. Let's do it.
Arms warrior approach.
Yeah. It's, and also like the role building is insane. I highly recommend it, obviously, but anyway, I feel kind of like as though people might think this is like a promotion thing, but it's not. Like, I just really like the stories. Okay. But while we're doing this, shout outs
to Selkie and Void Herald and Raven's Dagger and Rhaegar and Jiwa, who all the guys from the crossover chat, we call it the Cabal, who have been immensely helpful through getting through all of the cross promotion and the shout outs that they give. And when Stargazer's War 1 launched and was not performing well, some of them got onto a Discord call with me and we all troubleshooted like what was going wrong. And Raven's Dagger like put up a Reddit post promoting the book, and I rewrote the blurb, and honestly that like rescued the story. Shout out as well to Reddit Serials, an alternative serialization platform for writers on Reddit. The people over there were immensely welcoming to me after the Nothing Mage debacle on Royal Road, and I found such an amazing community and such great friends over there.
Can you talk about the debacle?
I
don't know what you're talking about.
This is at this point deep Royal Road lore.
Okay.
In December of 2019, I was writing my first ever story. It had just started blowing up. It was at, 800 followers, which was blowing up. And it was popping in and out of top 20 best rated. And it probably would not have landed there, knowing what I know now about how Royal Road works. Like, you spike and then you like slowly drop. And it was climbing up the page that was then called Trending and is now called Rising Stars. And the book was a bit amateurish because it was the first thing I ever wrote, but people liked it. Reviews were good. People were talking about it in the Discords, and living in my California bubble, was very excited to publish the chapter in which it is revealed that the protagonist is bisexual when he kisses another man.
Oh no.
And there's basically like they're parting ways. They will not see each other again for who knows how long. And they kiss and then they leave and they're separated. Yeah. It's about three sentences of text. And it sparked one of the biggest shitstorms of Royal Road controversy for some time. There were overnight hundreds of comments, hundreds of half-star reviews. There's a period of time when the Nothing Mage, with its paltry 2,000 followers, had the second most half-star ratings of any story on the site.
Yeah.
After Everybody Loves Large Chest, a story with 11,000 followers. There were some very hateful reviews, a lot of hateful comments, a lot of really, really supportive comments and really, really kind messages and supportive words from authors, from readers, from people I hadn't even met before. As I mentioned, the Reddit Serials crowd kind of adopted me after that, and they were all incredibly supportive, and Reddit Serials as a platform gets a lot less readership than Railroad does, but it's much more supportive. Railroad, I mean, less so now, but then especially has this reputation for being toxic, and Reddit Serials is not that at all. Incredibly supportive and very, very kind, which I loved at the time. It was very, very helpful. But there was all sorts of drama with Wing and with the mods on Royal Road about whether this backlash was appropriate. There was one mod who like blamed me for it, and then I like there was a lot of drama that went on for many, many days. And the ultimate outcome was I found myself inoculated to hateful comments. Because over the course of about 3 days, I got hundreds of them. And I learned then and there to, A, not care about my ranking, because I was suddenly ranked 4,000. And B, how to laugh at the frankly absurd things that a lot of reviewers were saying, a lot of comments were saying. To this day, my favorite review that I've ever received, and this is no longer visible anywhere because I took the story down, fully like scrubbed it from Royal Road after I published it. But the review was a 1-star, accusing me of, and I quote, writing a genuinely good story to trick people into reading gay romance.
That's genius. That's genius. Yeah. I mean, like one takeaway from this is don't be a homophobe. That's gay. Right, but like in the end, I feel, I mean, like maybe this sounds melodramatic now, right? But I feel as though I gotta thank you because you walked so that I can run. Like I got like the first chapter of Torchbearer. It's like, yep, there's a non-binary character in there.
Hell yeah! Right?
So it was like, yeah, cool, dope. I didn't get many 0.5 ratings because of it. Maybe I did, but they're not recognizable between the other 0.5 comments. Anyway, it's changed a lot, I feel.
Oh, for sure. The site has gotten a lot better in the past couple of years. Yeah. And I think a large chunk of that has been that it's grown so much.
Yeah, it dilutes it.
The number Kana gave me was 30% every year for the past couple of years, which is insane.
There are 20 million readers now, year over year, which is insane. Right, so I think it's only gonna keep growing, because like now the people are like discovering the TikToks for marketing. Is by the way, I gotta talk to you about that in a minute. Anyway, I think this has been it for the main podcast. I want to talk to you more about like some stuff here. For example, the Railroad readership, you know, like Rhaegar and. The idea of like creation versus editing and how to keep the two of them separate. But that will be for the bonus material, where you can also find, I think, like at least 2 hours for every single interview I've done, except for Maxime Durand. That's only half an hour. But I mean, like, you got 65 others. That's going to be okay. Anyway, so thank you, Nixia, for being
here. Thank you.
You have any last words before we switch over to the Patreon?
That sounded
content?
Very threatening.
Oh, you're going to have a good time.
Read The Stargazer's War. Book 2 just came out. Mm-hmm. It's cultivation in space. It's a lot of fun. And I'm very proud of it. I think it's the best writing I've ever written. So everyone should check it out.
Yeah. And remember, when Nixia... at the end of writing a chapter thinks it's awesome that it is awesome. So now that he thinks that it's the best thing he's ever written, then it is the best thing he's ever written. So you should probably go read it. Okay.
I am always
thank you so
about
much.
These things.
Yes, absolutely. as one is, like, there's no author bias. What are you talking about? All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening and or watching. And I'll see you next time. And if you're on Patreon, the show goes on.